popular demand. The NBL One West Radio Show. All the local basketball action, roundups, and reviews from the NBL One West. The SKG Radiology, official NBL One West Radio Show.
The final edition for 2022 of the NBL One West Radio Show. Our champions have been decided, and a couple of champions in the studio with me as well. Ben and Jordan, welcome along as always to the final edition of season 2022.
Thank you, Brett. It feels a bit odd. You wait around all season for the grand final, the crescendo of the year, and then all of a sudden, bam, you blink and you miss it. And, it was a huge weekend, though. Both games, in different ways, sort of lived up to expectations. And, big crowd Friday night, huge crowd Saturday night, a lot of fun. And a great way to end the season from an NBL One West perspective. And, we get to see what these two teams will do on the weekend, Ben.
Yeah, thank you for the warm welcome, Jordan and Brett. Yeah, it was a fantastic weekend. And the one thing I probably liked about it was all the sort of the community of Basketball WA sort of came together in this sort of, the top of the sort of the mountain, sort of this echelon of the women's game, which on Friday night was really, really exciting. But then the men's game, and just seeing like the Blue and Gold Army from Geraldton that made their way down, like the Coach of the Year, the Sixth Man of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, their captain in Maddie Wunderberg, and then the Rockingham Flames and what it meant to them, and just to see the outpouring of emotion, I feel, from some of their former players in particular, and seeing Travis Moore and being able to interview him post-game with Mark Utley, who's been a Coach of the Year for them 2014, and seeing Travis Moore, and I said on the call, he may have shed a tear, and he said, mate, I've shed more than a few tears already, and that moment is something that I felt really honoured to be a part of on Saturday night.
For anyone who has been under a rock the last few days, of course, the Warwick Senators getting up in the women's grand final. We'll talk to their captain, Nicole Jordison-Jaw, a little bit later on in the program. Of course, the Rockingham Flames getting up in the men. We'll speak to Wildcats legend Tom Jervis, who's also now sort of etched his name into legendary status down there at the Flames as well.
Yeah, a huge part of what they did on Saturday night, Tom Jervis. I was on the radio call, Sport FM, on Saturday night, and we were sort of postulating, we had to finish the broadcast before the MVP was announced, and we were postulating who could be. And it was, it was a race in three, really, because you look at Devondrick Walker, who was the MVP winner in the end of the finals. Marshall Nelson's last quarter was enormous, and he wielded such a huge influence on that game that he was a late smoky for it. But Tom Jervis was one who I thought was just so solid throughout the game, especially, Wunderberg got himself in foul trouble, and Tom Jervis was massive, brought all that championship-winning experience that he has from his time in the NBL, and you could see that bleed through to his teammates on the court. I thought he was exceptional, and, can't wait to hear what he has to say about what transpired on Saturday.
Of course, those teams not only winning the NBL One West Championship, but now they've got the opportunity to head over to the East for the National Finals. And we'll speak with Dean Anglin. He's the GM of the whole NBL One, and you're heading over that way as well, Ben.
Yeah, really excited and great to chat to Dean about the opportunities and the challenges that await the Warwick Senators and the Rockingham Flames, but also this opportunity for all the state leagues to be in that one playing field, and it'll be an exciting weekend of basketball at the State Basketball Centre there in Knox.
We'll be back on the other side of this to recap all of the action from those fantastic grand finals down there at the Bendant Basketball Centre on the weekend. We're handing out our Crystal Ball Award. I wonder who that could go to. And of course, the finals MVPs will break all of that down for you after this on the NBL One West Radio Show.
Your health and welfare are important. At SKG Radiology, we know this. Take advantage of bulk billing all Medicare rebatable services across our WA practices. Some exceptions may apply, so please ask our friendly staff for more details. From x-rays to ultrasounds, low-dose CT scans and MRIs, no matter where you're referred to, when you depend on the right result, choose SKG Radiology. Visit skg.com.au.
Let's get this thing started.
The all-new NBL One West Radio Show.
Welcome back, NBL One West Radio Show. Brett, Jordan and Ben with you on this final edition for 2022 as we celebrate our winners in the NBL One West, our final MVPs as well. But we've got one award that we have to give out first. It goes to our Crystal Baller of the Year, and it's definitely Ben Pether. Let's turn our ears back to something that happened on the 20th of June this year. It was just episode 7. 7 of our radio show, and this is how it went down.
And starting at point number one, the Warwick Senators women's team. They have Barr, Clinch Hoycart, Burden, the emerging talent of Forster, and they've just added an import. They're rolling right now, sitting at 9-2. My prediction is this for their storyline, is that they go in season 2022 for the rest of the season to the grand final, champions, undefeated from here on in.
Ooh, it's a big call.
With Coach Morley at the helm. I just feel like they've got the right balance. They just have so much talent there. Stacey Barr, volume shooter, Nat Burden, Clinch Hoycart, and the defensive presence of Chloe Forster. And not to miss anyone, but Nicole Jordison-Jaw has so much experience, and I feel that they will be our NBL 1 West champions for season 2022.
Big call. Okay, what's big number call. Two? You can't get much bigger than that. So
number two. Well, speaking about championships, will it be the fairy tale at Rockingham Flames for the men's team? That's what we're looking at right now. Jervis, higher. The fairy tale for their captain, Ryan Godfrey. And they've added Devondrick Walker, and they've also added Marshall Nelson. They've got Durden coming in off the bench. They've got the Beard brothers. They've got Redhead now also back in, who's come back from the US. And look, I just think with Ryan Petrick, he's got WNBL experience. He's won the championships with the women. They went one short last season. Will there be the fairy tale in Rockingham to complete it? And look, I just think if they can get the right contribution from Hyer, if they can get the best out of Tom Jervis, and if they could just get the right mix about getting the ball in the right hands with Nelson and Walker, sometimes you can almost have too many threats. But I feel like, can they get the right mix, come to the business end, and go one better in season 2022?
That's unbelievable audio, really. Like, I knew, obviously, we've harped on a lot on the show about the first prediction. I think we've told Brett every single Warwick person who's come on the show about that prediction and asked them about it, you know, from coach on down. But I'd kind of glossed aside the second bit about Rockingham and how they've got the mix there. And you rattled off all of the key components of that side. And it's stunning that was the better part of 3 months ago that you've made that call, Ben. So hats off to you. That's quite something. Yeah, it's
the crystal ball award, yeah, Ben Feather, ball, for this year. Have you got any lotto numbers you can help us out with?
Any lotto numbers? Well, I'm sure, like most basketballers, when they spend time in the Crown Precinct, they're probably chucking on red 23. So my numbers are no different to anyone else. But yeah, look, I just think, and the probably one thing that we mentioned on the call on Saturday night was Ryan Petrick went and got Marshall Nelson because he can get a bucket down the end. Mm-hmm. And that was the point of difference that he felt like he lacked against the Perry Lakes Hawks. Speaking of crystal balls, the fact that he went and got that guy, mm-hmm, in Marshall Nelson with a suspected fracture, like a hairline fracture in that left wrist. But the moment that he took over, they were up 1 point with 3 minutes 42 remaining. And then he knocks down that massive triple. And then we go down the other end, they get a stop, and then they come back down the other end, Marshall Nelson again. And Nicole literally was separated himself from the defense. Mm-hmm. Bang, bang, Marshall Nelson. And that's literally what his ability is, his ability to make big shots and his ability to separate himself from the defense. And we saw it there, and it made them time become a factor. 7 points there, time became a factor. They came down once again, the Geraldton Buccaneers. A rush shot, and then we saw Hyer get that layup, and that sealed it. So,
We might as well deep dive on the men's game now, because like that was the difference in the game, was that moment. And it's funny, you talk about recruiting guys with particular skill sets, and you know Ryan Petrick in the post game on the coverage said, you know, you just know he's a shooter. You know, him and Devondrick will just hit buckets. You know, he'll just get buckets for you, and like, you talk about, you know, specifics about those skill sets, but then you talk about the intangibles of the guy's just a baller. And that's what Marshall Nelson was in that moment. Like that second three that he hit, he was just a baller. Because he tried the move, it didn't work. He didn't get the separate. And then he went back to it again. He's like, all right, you didn't move off me. I'll just do the exact same thing again, get you to step back a little bit further, get you off, get that separation. And he just needed that extra little inch in the step back, perfect, knocks down the shot. Like, it's just, it's a baller move to go, all right, I tried it, it didn't work. Some guys might go back into their shell, you know, give the little hand off and then maybe, you know, try to run a roll to the bucket, something like that. But he's gone, all right, that didn't work, I'm just going to do that exact same thing again and get that little bit more separation and hit the shot. Just a ridiculous baller is Marshall Nelson. And that was what that last quarter was full of, those moments for the Rockingham Flames.
First half, one field goal attempt from Tom Jervis. Mm-hmm. They come out of halftime. First possession, they go straight into Tom Jervis. Back to the basket on Wunderberg. He spins to his left. Left-hand hook baseline. Mm-hmm. Nothing but nylon. And you just saw straight away that they were going to play faster and they were going to play through Jervis. And then almost him looking to be a scorer first to start that third quarter, I thought. But we can take nothing away from the Geraldton Buccaneers. Yeah. They played 30 minutes of incredible basketball. Yep. And it, just in that fourth quarter, fouls became an issue.
Yeah.
And that was the impact for them ultimately, was that Wunderberg went to the bench, Liam Hunt got in foul trouble as well, Muo went to the bench for the fouls, and ultimately I felt like that was the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if you touched on it in the TV broadcast at halftime, but I know on the radio broadcast, that's exactly what we said about Tom Jervis, is that they were reading him off the elbow, running that point all of that first half, the Buccaneers. You could see he was trying exactly what's worked for them all year. He was trying the handoffs. He was trying the, you know, the little pass into the paint for the guys who were cutting to the basket. And the Bucs were reading it every time. And, you know, they were either rolling off screens perfectly and guarding the guy on the perimeter, or they were stopping the pass going through the paint. They were reading it to perfection all through that first half. And we sort of said, does Ryan Petrick need to make Tom Jervis a scoring threat in the second half, because they need to know, like, the Bucks need to have to, they need to force the Bucks to defend the scoring threat as well as the pass, because they were able to just defend the pass because he wasn't trying to score. And the first possession, you're right, out of halftime, was that he backed Wunderberg into the basket, and it helped that Wunderberg's on three fouls at that point, you know, and then he picks up a fourth in the third minute or so of the third quarter, and then he only plays about 90 seconds of the last quarter before he gets his fifth. You know, that helped Rockingham enormously, because he's so big defensively in the post, is Wunderberg. And, you know, when your big defensive centre is only able to play 9 minutes and 48 seconds of the grand final because he got himself in foul trouble, that's always going to be a huge detriment to your team. So, yeah, they were so smart in that coming out of halftime, the Flames. And, gee, the Bucks made them work hard for it, though. I mean, they were still five down at three-quarter time. They, you know, they were 10 down at halftime, 5 down at three-quarter. They still had to work hard. They weren't in front until, what, the last 4 minutes of the game?
Tom Jervis went to the free-throw line. Yeah. He knocked down two free-throws, about 4:40 remaining. But I think, to focus on the Bucks, like Malik Mounier, I actually went back and listened to our preview last week, just think about where it was. And we said that they'd get big gains out of Stewart and Coleman, but it was what their role players were doing. It was actually almost Coleman probably didn't have his best game, you know, but it was, and they probably didn't get as much out of Wunderberg, maybe on both ends of the floor with the rebounding, which he, against the Junior Bulls, he had 13 rebounds and 6 offensive. But Ryan Blanchett came to the party. He shot the ball well. Malik Mounier was aggressive. Sean Stewart, I thought, was pretty good for what we've come to like from him this season. And, yeah, for Dale Joseph, and I really like what Liam Hunt said, it's like, yeah, we lost, but this is a great season. And, and it really is a testament to them. There can only be one winner. But, what they put on the floor, and it was huge. And, hats off to them, because, it was a tough game. And it's tough to lose in those circumstances. And, well, it was history made for the Rockingham Flames, their first banner.
Yeah, it was massive. Like, Mounier 15-5-3 was probably, you know, in 29 minutes of court time, was, I thought, on the night, was probably their most influential player on the night. Mounier, I thought he was outstanding. And then, they get 27 points off the bench. 27 points, 20 rebounds off the bench. It's just, that's a stunning number to get from your depth guys. So, yeah, it's they gave it everything, the Bucks. You know, things just didn't fall their way on the night. And the Flames, they finally had their full complement, you know. And I know Marshall Nelson wasn't fully fit, but with that full complement, they were so strong and ended up proving to be too strong. And that's absolutely no disrespect to the Bucks, because they were fantastic. It's just the Flames turned it on and got themselves the win. And, well done to Ryan Petrick, Ryan Godfrey and crew. And we'll hear from Tom Jervis about it soon.
The eventual grand final MVP was, of course, Devondrick Walker. I felt like he had a really quiet 26 points and just kind of got about his business along the way. He probably wasn't as influential with those key sort of backbreakers maybe that Nelson had that stuck in your mind, but his consistency and his input throughout the whole game was obviously recognised with that MVP vote.
Yeah, well, he had seven turnovers. And so the first half, Coleman was doing a really good job on him, and there was probably some, in the first quarter, some uncharacteristic turnovers from him. There was one where Muo really got after him, and he like sort of essentially kneed the ball out of bounds. He lost his handle on it. He got double-teamed on the baseline all in the first half, right in front of John Reilly and Bryce Cotton, where the Wildcats sort of players and coaches were sitting on the baseline. But he came into his own, and if you watch the game back, he hit some shots when they just needed a basket, but they were quiet shots. So it wasn't, and it was one thing I like about Devondrick Walker is everything that happens with him is out of their stuff. That's one thing I like about him. You talk about Marshall Nelson being a bit of a baller. Devondrick Walker in his own right is a baller, but everything comes in their stuff, and that's why it sort of doesn't stand out as much. And it's almost like you don't know what you've got or how good you've got it till it's gone, right? So he was hitting some of those things. So, yeah, I thought very quiet. And, of course, some great news for him coming out today as well, Brett.
Yeah, getting picked up, of course, by the Bullets in the NBL. So I think it's a nice nod for the NBL 1 West and certainly a testament to his production and his ability to work within a system as well, I think, because he's essentially going to be that third import, I suppose. So he's going to have to play his role to a certain extent within that team as well.
Yeah, that'll be huge to see, you know, whether he can transfer what he's done in the NBL 1 West to the NBL level. And, you know, we saw Marshall Nelson do it last year, have a great season for the Redbacks and then be a really solid contributor for the Taipans. So I guess we'll see what happens with Devondrick this year. And, yeah, that's a great thing for him because we've said all year that he's, you know, that's no disrespect to the NBL 1 West. He's too good to be playing at this level. He should be playing at a higher level.
We'll turn our eyes to the women's in a moment. Nicole Jordison-Jaw will join us, the captain of the Warwick Senators, on the NBL 1 West radio show.
At SKG Radiology, we care about your health and welfare. This is why we bulk bill Medicare rebatable services across all 20 SKG locations. Some exceptions may apply. Ask our friendly staff for details. Visit skg.com.au.
All the local basketball action, roundups and reviews from the NBL 1 West. The SKG Radiology, official NBL 1 West radio show.
Welcome back, NBL 1 West radio show. Turning our eyes and ears now to the women's game. Is it 28 or 27 years since they've last won a championship, the Senators, in the women's?
1994.
Okay.
Warwick Stadium looked a little different back then, Breakfast, so you might be able to remember it.
Well, I think the old bit of the stadium is actually still there. It hasn't changed too much, to be honest, but they've got some nice fresh additions, certainly in recent years. Look, unfortunately, in that game, being on the radio call, with the Tigers getting down early and getting a bit under pressure, they were always kind of playing catch-up and weren't able to have the same joy of catch-up perhaps that the Flames had, having been down by double digits at certain points as well.
The Senators won every quarter in that game. They, you know, and they won it by a minimum of four every quarter, you know, and 28-16 at quarter time. And they completely disrupted Alex Sharp and just didn't let her, you know, there's the Alex Sharp move, and Brett, you've seen enough of her play at this level to know that there's the move where, you know, she comes up to the perimeter, she'll either run the handoff or you know, or the little give as she cuts and drive at the top and drives straight to the basket. They just didn't let that happen. You know, they guarded her so well off the screen. Yeah. You know, they're able to switch really competently and, you know, held it to single digits in points, which is almost unheard of, you know, from Alex Sharp. Shot 2 for 17 or something like that from the field, which is, you know, again, one of those stats that's just completely unheard of for her. And look, it's, you know, they defended her incredibly well, and then they were able to, every time they were challenged, every time it looked like, you know, the Tigers were going to come back in this one and make something of it, you know, they got it back to nearly, I think it was 13 they got it back to in the second half, and, you know, they were on a little bit of a roll and sort of thought, you know, if they hit the next basket and get it to 10 at three-quarter time, you know, it's what you said last week, if it comes back to a two-possession game with 4 or 5 minutes to go, you'd back them in. And then the Senators were just able to go the other end and hit shots, bam, bam. Mm. First quarter was way too easy for them. And Simon Parker said as much, that they defended really poorly in the first half. You know, they just let Warwick out in transition way too easily, and they walked up the floor. So I mean, they had the long pass to halfway, you know, from the inbound or from a rebound, and they'd already have someone in the paint ready to receive. You know, whether it was Nat Burton, whether it was Leo Fibich, whether it was Stacey Barr, they were all getting up the court with speed, and they were able to stretch the floor on the Willetton defense, who weren't able to keep up, and then they weren't able to produce offensively either. And it was a clinical performance. From where I saw it, they just showed exactly why they won 18 games in a row.
Yeah, I think it was the eye test in the first half really summed it up, and the ability of Warwick, they were getting baskets really easily, and Willetton were really grinding, and I didn't think there was a lot of separation coming from between the defense and the offense on the offensive end for Willetton. And talk about Alex Sharp, like most teams will send their four or their five to Alex Sharp. They were able to send like a true three in Leonie Fibich to her and still have Mackenzie Clinch-Hoycutt and Nat Burton on the floor. So once you got a legit 6'2", 6'3", and Fibich guarding you, and then you're putting the ball on the floor, and then you're running into a ring protector in Clinch-Hoycutt or in Nat Burton, that makes it really, really hard. They didn't shoot the ball overly well from outside. But to the credit of the Tigers, like, it was probably Sharp. It probably wasn't her best night. It probably wasn't Des Kelly's best night. But in the likes of Sophie Dorner, she got 2 feet in the paint, played off 2 feet. She was creating opportunities. Maybe the finishes didn't come, but she was creating. Gandini hit a bunch of shots. So again, Hayley Winter didn't play with that knee injury. We wish her all the best with her recovery. But Taylor Hepburn stepped out, and I guess
I thought she was outstanding.
Listening back to our call and our preview last week, it was about what the role players are going to do. And I think that it was actually their role players were actually better on the night than the Warwick ones, but the Stars were Warwick, and they just had enough people to be able to create their own.
I guess Warwick just don't have as many role players. They have a star-studded lineup. You know,
they only go six, really.
Yeah, they only go six. They only have to play six deep because they're pretty much all stars, all six of them. And, you know, Willetton, they do have, Sharp and Lubke, and then, you know, Des Kelly's probably up there as well. Real off night for Desiree Kelly. You've probably, again, speaking of nights you'll never see, she hit 2 points on the night, and that was what, in the last quarter, she ended up getting herself on the score sheet. It was either late in the third or early in the last.
They were getting great looks at most certain times, and it was hitting the back of the ring, and sometimes it just doesn't fall for you.
Yeah, Taylor Hepburn was great, I thought. I was really impressed with her contribution, and you're right about Sophie Doran. You know, she gets 8, 3, and 4 on the night, but that's on 3 for 10 shooting, and I thought a lot of those were great opportunities that just, you know, rolled off the front of the basket, or, you know, hit the back of the rim or something. You know, when she was aggressive on the drive and creating opportunities that way, that's a little bit of a different look that they weren't used to, or something like that from Sophie Doran. They tried the three bigs thing at the start, didn't work, went with the more classic, you know, guard setup, and in the end, Warwick were just far too good on the night. And that's, not to take anything away from Willetton. A couple of players had a bit of an off night, not through any fault of their own. They were defended really, really well. And, you know, the role players still stood up. And, it's credit to Warwick and what they've done this year. It was an outstanding win for them.
Fairly or unfairly, you're left with a feeling that the Tigers played their grand final the week before.
Yeah, I think they had a phenomenal weekend weekend before. That double header to put them in the position that they were after they'd lost to Warwick the first weekend, to bounce back.
Yeah, Coburn and Joondalup, they were Coburn two and huge Joondalup. Wins. Yeah.
So.
And what I had called last week is Des Kelly was going to need another shooting night like what she had against the Wolves to get up over the Senators, and that didn't come to fruition, as we clearly found out, and they were left wanting in a few areas and didn't get some of the usual production, as you guys have alluded to from some of their regular contributors, I suppose. We're yet to talk to Nicole Jordison-George. She'll join us on the other side of this. We've still got Tom Jervis before the hour is out, and Dean Anglin, the national GM of the NBL One, will join us to talk national finals as well on the NBL One West Radio Show.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
This is the all-new NBL One West Radio Show. All the local basketball action, roundups, and reviews from the NBL One West. Check the NBL One West Radio Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Podbean, and Podomatic.
It's the NBL One West Radio Show. Welcome back. And as promised, we've now got the captain of the Warwick Senators. She's a newly crowned champion there, Nicole Jordison-George. Welcome along to the NBL One West Radio Show.
Yeah, nice to be here, guys.
Well, you were mentioning off air that your voice is a little bit husky. It's been a few days of celebrations, I can imagine now. What's the mood been like, of course?
So I apologise for my huskiness. It's been a couple of days celebrating, and we had Sunday off just because we knew we were going over to nationals. But, it's been a pretty hectic Friday night and Saturday day, and but it's been very enjoyable, and there's lots of good vibes going around.
The word evergreen has been thrown around in the context of your performance in season 2022, and maybe even a bit like a fine wine, in fact, improving as the years go on. What's your thoughts around that depiction?
Yeah, I've definitely heard the fine wine comment going around a lot. But, you know, I just think age is a number, and I'm listening to my body as much as I need to. So, I mean, as long as I'm playing well and not getting any injuries, you know, I'll just take the good.
Nicole, Jordan Scudetta here. Congratulations on a well-deserved championship win on the weekend. I guess at what point in the game on Friday did you sort of know that, yeah, we've got their number and this nearly three-decade drought is over?
No, I mean, it's hard to say. I think with our team throughout the season, we've been told that we don't celebrate a lot. I mean, we go out and we enjoy each other's company, but, you know, there's been quite a few wins that we've had, and sometimes it doesn't feel like we've won. It's just the way we are. I don't know why. But coming into this grand final, we said that we would definitely celebrate. And I don't even think there was a time where we looked and we thought, oh my God, we've won this. I think we just kept going because that's just what we do in our team. And I think with about 5 minutes to go, that's when it started to sink in for some of us, but we just kept going and there was no emotions being shown until right at the end.
A pretty fantastic celebration. So you must have been letting out some of that pent-up emotion from the whole season, I think.
Absolutely. And I'd have to say 100% that all came out at the end of that game.
You know, Leone Fibich wins the finals MVP for another double-double. It's just, you know, we're saying that about her every single week throughout her time in the NBL One West, and, you know, she's tied on votes with Stacey Barr. I guess one of the things that going into the game it was thought could be your downfall is the fact that, you know, you play the six and that's sort of it. I guess how satisfying was it to, you know, to be able to take those absolute top end stars that you've got in your lineup, and all six of you just be, I guess, to be able to take it right through the end and show, you know what, the way we've set up our team, you know, is good enough and can work and is championship worthy.
Yeah, it's a really good feeling, and you know, I think we're such a tight knit group that we just know how each other is feeling at every second and every moment, and we just support each other so well. I don't know how you find a connection like that, but I know that we've got it, and it is such a good feeling to have. And even with those juniors coming through, like, they just look up to us, and, you know, you say something to them and they just take everything on board that we say. I don't know how you find that, but, I mean, I've loved this whole entire season, and you can just see with our team on and off the court that we enjoy being around each other.
I guess the feeling came through of that, how much the group means to each other when Emma Moscato comes on the court late and you know, hasn't hit a bucket all year and was one who was slated to be an assistant coach this year and has found herself on the bench for the most part in a lot of games and you know, gets some minutes, hits a couple of buckets at the end, and Hayley Alone hits one from the corner as well, you know, where you're sort of getting that the rest of the bench involved. Like, how describe that feeling when you're seeing those buckets go down as a captain, and especially for Emma, of someone that you've spent a lot of time with?
Yeah, you just made all the hairs on my arm and legs stand up just even mentioning it, all of that. So it just means so much to me being able to, and, you know, and the girls being able to get all of those juniors on the court in that grand final. I mean, it's an experience that hopefully it will come around again for them. But being able to do that is a really good feeling. And, you know, getting Emma on the court was really, really important to not just Emma, but for us as a team, to send her out the way that we've sent her out. Like, that's absolutely amazing feeling, and I'm so glad we were able to do it.
I feel like Leone Fibich has got a bit of bragging rights as she heads over to Spain, comes down to Australia, doesn't lose a game while she's here, wins the championship and wins the grand final MVP.
You know, a lot of people say that we didn't lose a game, but I know people, the centre of excellence, we did lose that game mid-season.
True. So, technicality, though. Technicality.
Absolutely, 100%. But, you know, we sat on that bench when we were losing to those girls, and we all looked at each other And I don't know what happened, but it was just some moment that changed between all of us. And we all just looked at each other and said we needed to have that loss. And to be able to go 18 games straight and, you know, win the grand final, like, is something absolutely amazing. And she can go over to Spain and brag as much as she likes because we did win that championship.
Well, looking forward now to the national finals, of course, which are on this weekend. We asked you off the air if you're expecting that the full squad would be available, and it sounds like, fortunately, they are, Leonie also included.
Yeah, that's correct. So I think we're only taking 9 across with us, and then a few, like the managers and all of that, are coming as well. So it'll be a really good experience. And, yeah, I'm just really grateful that we get to have another week with Leo, because we wouldn't be the team without her either. So we're really looking forward to it.
Prove this year that you only need 6 anyway, let alone taking 9. So, you know, Alyssa Duncan comes on every now and then as the 7. And
harsh.
And you're I'm saying that as a
girls
good
deserve
thing.
It. Like, they deserve the trip too, don't they?
Absolutely. speaking of, you know, Leonie, it seems like she's really enjoyed her time over here. I guess what's been bandied about is that, no disrespect to the league, but she's too good to be playing here. She should be playing at a much higher level. What are the chances, you think, of getting her back for 2023?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I don't know. I know she's got a big schedule in Spain, but, I mean, I know that if it's possible, that will make it happen. And, I wouldn't want her to go to any other team but us, so, you know.
Yeah, the club may have to throw a few extra shackles at her next season, I reckon, probably. But certainly,
absolutely.
She certainly presents as a WNBL level type of talent. So, much in the same way that Robbie Ryan's skill set has converted across to the Lynx, there would have to be clubs who would be looking at her, and this national finals sort of platform will give her that opportunity again, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're not, they're absolutely silly. Somebody needs to get onto that, that's for sure.
As a Warwick person as well, Nicole, how's it been? Yep. Like, I guess it feels as well like the championship is kind of icing on the cake as far as the growth of the club over the last 6 or 7 years, you know, to the point of, you know, how the facilities have changed, you know, hosting a national championship this year at Warwick Stadium and doing a fantastic job of that, to then cap all of that growth off with a championship. What's the feel like from a club perspective, and have you been able to reflect on that with some executives over the last couple of days?
Yeah, well, I mean, on Friday night, a lot of them came to where we were celebrating, and, you know, we all had a good chat about it all. And, I mean, seeing the smile on their faces was just as big as the ones that we had on our face. So, you know, tomorrow will be another story when we go to training. Yes, we're going to training tomorrow. But we walk in those doors again, and we'll see all of their faces, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about it again. So we'll look forward to that tomorrow night.
One name that we haven't mentioned as yet in our chat, and I did want to throw out there, was Janelle Morley, of course, the second-year coach up there at the Senators. Great to see a female head coach. We have spoken with her and spoken a bit about some of the female coaches and roles within the league and some of the growth in that area. Her celebration, talk to that.
Yeah, she was. She celebrated really well with us. Even on the Saturday, she came out for a couple, and we had lunch and everything like that. So she's been right involved with it all, and it's well deserved. Like, everything that she's put in place for us this season, and I mean, it showed in the grand final, and we're just as close with her. You know, I've had multiple conversations on phones during the season, and even leading up to this nationals now, the amount of conversations we've had on the phone together, I think that's an asset to her, because the connection that we have on and off the court is one that I've not had with a coach before like this. So it's something that I love anyway.
Congratulations once again on the NBL One West Championship, and we wish you all the best also in those national finals. Hope that with that full squad in play that you can do the WA side proud as well.
Yep, hopefully we will.
Well, all the best and good luck.
All right, thanks, guys.
Nicole Jordison-Jaw there, the captain of the Championship Warwick Senators in the NBL One West. Thanks once again.
Thanks, guys.
All the local basketball action, roundups, and reviews from the NBL One West. Let's get this thing started. The all-new NBL One West radio show.
NBL One West Radio Show, welcome back. As promised, we've got a Wildcats and NBL legend on the phone, Tom Jervis. He's now also a champion down there at the Rockingham Flames in the NBL One West to go with another SBL championship that he already had as well. Welcome along, Tom Jervis.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
Yes, pleasure. Well, we mentioned obviously the Flames getting up in the men's gig. It's been a long time coming for the Flames, and you've done a lot in your career. Obviously, you've got the NBL championships, you've played against NBA teams over in the States. Where does this kind of grassroots effort rank in all of those achievements?
Oh, look, you know, every championships is always up there. It doesn't matter which one it is. But this, you know, this one is quite special. You know, we did a really good job over the last couple of years of bringing the older guys into the fold, especially at this time of the year, and hearing their stories and what it means to them. And I think, you know, to see those guys on the court after celebrating with us was something really special, and I don't think I'll ever forget.
I think everyone had a bit of a soft spot for Ryan Godfrey, the captain, keen to, you know, reward his hard work, his longevity, his loyalty to the club as well. We spoke with him on last week's show, if I recall correctly, and I think that to a certain extent, they were a sentimental favourite for a lot of people.
Yeah, oh, 100%. You know, Buff is, you know, he's been a Rocco kid through and through, and for him to come up the ranks and, you know, they've had some very good teams that, you know, he's played on personally, but within the club themselves that just haven't had the opportunity to get it done. But, you know, to see, you know, how happy he was and, you know, the shedding the tears on the court, it was what a memory for him and, you know, his family as well. You know, they've rode all the ups and downs with him. And so, yeah, absolutely amazing achievement for his career and a testament to who he is as a captain and a player in this league.
Tom, Jordan Scardetta, mate, congratulations on the victory on the weekend. It was a long time coming for the club and certainly a deserved win based on this season especially. I want to dive into the game from the weekend itself a little bit and then we'll touch on the season overall. As much as you've had a chance to reflect over the last couple of days. On Saturday, there was obviously you well down at halftime, you know, and the Bucks have been defending you incredibly well, held you to 39 points in the first half, which is probably not something you guys are particularly used to given the offensive firepower that you've got. And then it looked like the way you were being used in the second half was distinctly changed. Was that something that Ryan Petrick drove from the coaching point of view, or did you see something out on the court that said, look, hey, if I change the way I play a little bit, it might just give us a little bit more offensively?
Yeah, look, I mean, for one, you know, Geraldton had their game plan down packed and they were shooting the ball amazingly and their defense was just unbelievable that first half. We couldn't really find a way through. So absolute credit to them for executing that. But, you know, we didn't really speak about too much in halftime other than the fact that, you know, they've hit some fantastic shots and that, you know, we probably weren't playing the way that we had been up until, you know, that point. So, you know, we're quite a run and gun type of team and we execute really well on the offensive end and we weren't doing any of it. So it's just, we just kind of calmed ourselves down. And then I was sitting on the bench with Ryan and he just said, oh, we'll just throw it in the post first play and just see how you go, which block do you want it on? And I just showed it to him and he got it to me there. And thankfully the shot went down. So it wasn't really too much, you know, he didn't really want to pound it inside or anything like that. He just said, I'll get you a touch inside early and get it moving and kind of calmed everyone's nerves a little bit and we were just ready to roll from that point.
And Brett talked about Ryan Godfrey and what he means to the club. You see him hurt himself in the first quarter, you know, like trying to blaze back on a defensive play to stop a bucket. You know, he tumbles into the chairs and hurts his arm. And then he comes back into the game, gets a bit of a knock to the head and has to go off again. And he just keeps coming back from that. How much of a lift does that give the guys on the bench and the guys on the court when, you know, you see you're not only your actual leader, but, you know, in what embodies the Rockingham Flames as far as club culture goes, go through that and still keep battling on?
Oh, yeah, look, I mean, from the team's perspective, getting to see your captain, you know, he leaves everything out on the court. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, a grand final or a regular game, you know, he takes so many hits and does so many little things out there that, you know, it does inspire everyone, and especially the bench. It keeps them engaged. And, you know, no one likes seeing their captain, you know, take a knock or fall to the floor or anything like that. So it gets them more engaged as well. So, you know, we were, you know, luckily that he wasn't actually hurt or, you know, too badly or anything. And, you know, I think it wouldn't have mattered if he was severely injured. He probably would have been stepping out there regardless to try and finish off the game. He he's just a warrior of a guy. So, you know, we did feed off that a lot.
And speaking of guys who are injured and inspiring, Marshall Nelson comes back from Europe. You know, he's got a fracture in his wrist and you know, and plays. And not only that, has a huge influence in the last quarter when the game's on the line. Like, I guess how good is it to be a part of a team that has a guy, not only Devondrick Walker winning, you know, MVP on the season and finals MVP as well, but then to have Marshall Nelson be able to come off the bench injured and, you know, hit 11 in a quarter and be just such a huge influence on a grand final?
Oh, look, it's wild. Those threes were huge. You know, he's been massive for us all year. And, you know, to lose in the back end of the season, we kind of had to retweak everything because, you know, him and Devondrick, you know, arguably the best two-card combo in the league. And so, you know, for us to lose him, such a powerful offensive player, we were kind of like, ah, far out. And then he's like, I'm going to be back for the grand final if we make it, it's all good. So, yeah, look, he was amazing. He's been great all season. You know, he's one of those players that are on the cusp of making NBL squads. And, you know, hopefully he does get that opportunity again. But, you know, to finish off that fourth quarter the way he did, it was, you know, it was kind of like just get the ball to Marty and let him go to work. So it's always fun that you can do that throughout a game.
The team's now set to participate in the national finals in Melbourne on the weekend. Is it your expectation that the full squad is available for that?
We're still trying to figure it out. I think there's a couple of hangovers going on at the moment, so they're trying to work through it to figure out who's available and who's not. They're trying to work around, you know, people's work schedules and things like that. So, you know, fingers crossed we do have the full squad available, because it's going to be a fantastic event, and, you know, to see who's the best club in the nation. So that'll be it's going to be a cool experience, you know, regardless of whether, you know, teams are fielded full or not. Yeah, this would be some people's, you know, biggest tournament that they get to play in. So, you know, I'm really excited about it. I'm definitely going to be there and looking forward to the challenge.
So what you're saying, Tom, is that those teams that were in the NBL 1 East and held their grand finals a week earlier than those in the West and the South and Central, they've got a little bit of a leg up because they've just had that extra week to recover from all of the, let's say, functions that come with winning a championship?
Look, my hope is that they've just been partying ever since. So, you know, they'll all still be hungover just as much as the rest of us. But, look, I'm fortunate for them that they've had that extra week. But, I mean, I think for us, you know, we're coming in fresh in terms of, you know, we haven't had that week break where, you know, you kind of lose your touch, you know, regardless of whether we've been enjoying it or not. We'll be raring to go.
I look back at this season for the Flames, and it's obviously a championship-winning season and a history-making one for the club, but it feels like something that a future can be built around that contains more championships and more success because of the opportunities that were afforded to you know, guys in the squad due to the fact that players became unavailable and there was the illnesses at the start of the year. So there's been a lot of exposure for the younger local guys to the NBL 1 level. Do you feel like being part of the daily grind there at the Flames, that this team has the nucleus of a long-time championship threat for, you know, for maybe the next half decade?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the aim of the club, you know, from my understanding from 5 years ago when Greg joined that team, is that, you know, they're building for something special and building, you know, obviously building for the first championship, but for the future. And, you know, like you just said, there is a lot of young guys who are coming up through the ranks there, and they seem to be able to recruit unbelievably. Obviously, we got quite blessed in getting Devondrick and then Marshall in one hit. But, you know, the core group that's been about, you know, has been about for the last, you know, 5 years. So I do see it as being something like the old school Perry Lakes, you know, Lakeside teams, in terms of just being constantly up there and competing for championships, because they've kind of set themselves up in really, you know, focusing on juniors and going through that grind to begin with, but then obviously putting really good pieces around them to help them grow as people and basketball players. So, look, the organisation's done a fantastic job, and you know, in my opinion, that's a trajectory that they're on, and fingers crossed they can keep that.
Tom Jervis, championship winner at the Perth Wildcats and now also at the Rockingham Flames in the NBL 1 West. Congratulations once again.
Thanks very much for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it. And obviously, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Geraldton Buccaneers for their season. I mean, it's tough to come up against, you know, to any squad, but when, you know, we were pretty stacked, and so were they. And I just thought it was such a great quality basketball game that was put on Saturday night. And thankful that it was 1-2, you know, throughout the season, finishing it off with such a great event. So, you know, shout out to them and their season and all they put in. They were a fantastic team throughout.
Tom Jervis, appreciate your time and good luck in Melbourne, hoping that you make it across for the national finals.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Tom Jervis there on the NBL One West radio show.
Your health and welfare are important. At SKG Radiology, we know this. Take advantage of bulk billing all Medicare rebatable services across our WA practices. Some exceptions may apply, so please ask our friendly staff for more details. From X-rays to ultrasounds, low-dose CT scans and MRIs, no matter where you're referred to, when you depend on the right result, choose SKG Radiology. Visit skg.com.au.
2-0-1-5. Yeah, it feels so good. All the local basketball action, roundups and reviews from the NBL One West. The SKG Radiology, official NBL One West radio show.
Welcome back, NBL One West radio show. It's all about the national finals from here on in, and we're joined by the general manager of the NBL One Nationwide, Dean Anglin. Thanks very much for joining us on the NBL One West radio show.
Good to be with you again, boys.
Well, it's exciting times as we lead into those national finals. Some people are still a little bit unaware of the format and what's going on, but essentially there's six men's and six women's teams who will battle out for that national championship.
Yeah, we've got 18 games, hopefully all action-packed over the 3 days, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They'll all play reasonably simultaneously. We're trying not to give anyone any sort of competitive advantage in the points scenario to know what they have to do or not do in it, so the games will tip off. To give you an idea, 6:15 and 6:30 for the women, and then 8:15 and 8:30 on the three courts that we're setting up at the State Basketball Centre in Melbourne. So should be a cracker of a weekend, starting on Friday and then finishing sort of early Sunday afternoon, where we'll we'll definitely name the first ever NBL One national champions for men and women.
How big a process has it been, Dean, to get to this point? I know it was a few false starts last year, based on the situation surrounding COVID and the pandemic. And how much of a relief is it that you're a few days away and it looks like nothing's going to stand in your way from here?
It's a little surreal to actually think we might get this done this year. So 2020, we thought we were going to have our first NBL One national final, which would have been contested between the North, the South and the Central conferences as the three conferences that were scheduled to start or play in 2020. 2021 would have included NBL One West, so all of your teams from over there. And then obviously both of those being delayed by COVID actually puts us in that beautiful position where we've now got all five of the major state competitions around the country playing under the NBL One banner. And we will legitimately have a national competition on the weekend. Probably the really nice and romantic part about it, with the exception, and I feel really quite sorry for them, but with the exception of the Darwin Salties out of Northern Territory, the results of all of the conferences have actually meant that we've got a team from every state and territory of Australia, with the exception of the Northern Territory, playing at the national finals. 12 spots, 12 individual clubs. No team has both their men's and their women's team coming. It's such a nice picture to be painting. When you look at it, every bit of artwork we've done, today finalizing has had 12 different logos on it. It's all kind of cool to be putting it together. In terms of the workload, I'm sure everyone knows what goes into putting a basketball game on. Everyone listening probably knows what goes into putting a team on the court. Try and fly them in from 12 different places around the country, all on the same day, get them all into buses, get them all into accommodation, and plan that without any certainty about who was going to be where. It's a logistical nightmare, but there's a whole heap of fun at the end of the day as well, because we're going to put on a show.
Absolutely, it will be a show. Dean Anglin, Ben Pether here. Just in regards to the last fortnight, we've had a keen eye, of course, after the draw of the seedings and where people will be playing the schedule for Friday starting in Melbourne. We've been watching on the NBL One live stream and on KO the different conference finals that have been taking place, and especially for the NBL One West, had a keen eye on what was going on with the NBL One Central. That looked like an absolute spectacle on the weekend as well. And was it just my hearing, or did I hear the great John Casey calling their men's game on Saturday night?
John Casey comes out of the woodwork every single year to call the final in South Australia. It is such a delight for basketball fans to hear Case, courtside, and he absolutely loves those games, every single year. I'm fortunate, Ben. I've actually been to nearly every single grand final this year. So I started on the Friday night on the Gold Coast for game one of the men's series. There went to game two of the women's North series in Logan. On a Sunday, I flew down to Sydney and went to the East men's and women's final. Last Friday, I was in WA for the women's championship of the West, and then flew across to South Australia for the men's and the women's on the Saturday night. So thankfully, the West is split over a Friday, Saturday, and meant that I could get to the two of them on the weekend. The only one I didn't get to on the weekend was the South championship, but given my history as the league general manager of NBL 1 South, I felt that I already knew what was going on at that one and I didn't really need to see it. So, it was good to get around the country and see how every individual state and conference puts their games on. The beauty of NBL 1 is that we still leave it up to the states to manage their competitions and to manage the way that they do these things. So, we're not imposing anything on them other than a little bit of signage, the centre court decals and the Coles Express stuff to support our sponsors and, the signage around the outsides of the court. But otherwise, it's just, go your hardest and put on the greatest show you possibly can. And I'm really proud of the way that every one of the states, has put on their grand final series. It's now over to us, I guess, and I've said this as I've gone around the country. I know I'm pretty strict on the way that we present things and the way that we do things and the way that the league looks and sounds. I know that all our eyes go on to us and how we present Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we're putting everything we can into making sure the State Basketball Centre looks amazing and it gives the players the best experience they can possibly get out of it. But, as I said, I mean, the best part about this is we've got 12 different clubs from all over the country, all going to come together. And you're right, the West are going to match up against some pretty good teams out of South Australia. There's no secret. There's a few challenges going around in terms of the rosters at the moment with NBL talent being unavailable, and obviously the Opals are in their World Cup camp. So I think that's going to level the playing field a little bit, and your teams are going to come over and they're going to be right in the mix. So, let's see what happens Friday night, and it might set them up for the rest of the weekend.
You spoke about going around the country for grand finals, Dean, and seeing them all. You also had a bit of a trek around the country for the wildcard games. Of course, there's going to be a wildcard entrant into both the men's and the women's in this championship on the weekend. What's the feedback been now that sort of portion of it is over on the wildcard setup and how that went with the Centre of Excellence?
Yeah, look, it's really interesting. I think the whole series, really took shape over the course of the year. As the year went on further and further, I think the games got far more competitive and people understood that this was a ticket to the national final. And you could just see, the theory is a little bit anti-basketball, I guess, because it's a little bit run up the scoreboard, right? And that's the theory of it, and that probably goes against the spirit of the game some points, and especially the Frankston game over here in Victoria. They needed, I think with about 20 seconds on the clock, they needed two more points to qualify, and they knew that. They knew exactly what they needed, they got a free throw or a foul on a layup. Made the free throw and that got them over the line. So, it was that competitive going into it to figure out, who was going to get through. We spoke a little bit off air, but Southern District Spartans were really probably a little bit lucky in the women's conference. Their games and the games against the Logan Thunder up in Queensland were actually postponed because the COE had a COVID outbreak in the middle of the season. So those two games were tacked onto the back of the WA trip that I came over to, and so that meant that the COE girls, by the time they got to the Southern Districts, had played six games in about 8 days, including flights from Canberra to Perth and then from Perth to Brisbane. Really, really tough ask for anyone to do that, let alone, a bunch of girls that are 16, 17, 18, 19. And to come up against, fully fledged, strong adult teams, that they just got a little bit blown off the court on those last couple of games, and that set the tone for those teams and get Southern Districts all the way through. So we'll see what happens when they come up against other teams across the country in the weekend.
And Dean, the format for the national finals, it's got a special format that you're using similar to the NBL Blitz as we understand it. Can you run us through that for listeners who may not be familiar?
Yeah. So it's the Blitz and the NBL Cup model for scoring, so all for rankings. So essentially for every quarter that a team wins, they'll get 1 point. And then anyone that wins a game, they will get 3 points. If a team ties or if two teams tie a quarter, then the point is split, so it's 0.5. And any game that goes to OT means nothing other than the winner getting the 3 points. So essentially for every game, there's 7 points available. You could lose three quarters of the game, win one quarter and win the game and still get more points than your opposition. So you would get 4 and your opposition would get 3 for the quarters that they won. And essentially from that, those 7 point games, we'll then rank all of the teams, and then that sets up the tone for how they get scheduled for the Saturday night. So the Friday night, I think everyone knows, Friday night draw was done randomly. So random that the West and the Central drew each other in the women's and the men's. But yeah, the draw was done at the mid-season conference of all the CEOs and state competition managers. And then, moving forward beyond the Friday night, it just basically goes on rankings. So
well, you've had your statistician's hat on, and there's a bit of a reason why the top team won't necessarily play the sixth team in the second round. So run us through that, because this is some interesting maths for anyone who's wanted to get into the nitty-gritty detail of it.
Yeah, so if you're the top-ranked team, if you're ranked number one, the team that you played on the Friday night will be ranked number six. So you cannot be matched up on the Saturday 1v6, because then you would be playing the exact same team. So you have to go to the next lowest qualifier, which is team number five. So that makes that one reasonably easy. The reality then you go, well, number two should probably play number six because that's the lowest qualifier again. But if we did that, that forces teams three and four to play each other again from the Friday night. Mm. So it is a little bit of a complicated math scenario, but I ran it about a billion times to make sure that I was right. But team number one needs to play team number five. Team number two then plays team number four, which means team number three plays team number six. Now, there's a couple of things in that. The thing that I really like about that is if you win a game on the Friday night, and you finish as the third highest qualifier, you get the lowest ranked qualifier going into round two. That probably puts, you know, teams 1 to 4 still in the mix for the championship the next night. Yeah. You know, I think if you're ranked number six, you know, maybe even 5 and 6, you're probably not making it through to the championship game on the Sunday. But if you're ranked in the top four, I think based on the way that the structure is, you know, with team number two playing number four, for instance, I think everyone's still in the mix there.
Yes.
Right? So
maybe three's the sweet spot, it sounds like.
maybe. Look, I mean, I think the reality is this is the first time we've run it where we are dealing with semi-professional and amateur athletes. So we're really restricted in the fact that we can only play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We can't really blow it out to a week long where, you know, you could have the five conferences, not have a wild card series, have everybody play each other once, so four games, and then rank it based on that, and then you'd literally just go based on win loss and point percentage. That'd be beautiful, but that means, you know, probably 4 to 5 games, maybe spread out over 6 or 8 days. That would be I think at the level that we're playing and at the that would be cost prohibitive for us doing it. We probably wouldn't be able to maintain that for multiple years on end. And I think right now, trying to come up with a formula that works over 3 days is the most important part. We can pull the trigger on that literally the week after the conferences finish, and, you know, we can hopefully create something that is a sustainable national finals structure moving forward. So this is the first one. We're absolutely going to review it at the end of the first one and go, what worked, what didn't work, what do we like, what don't we like? You know, it's not all going to be perfect. We know that. We hope that we're going to put on a good show, and the clubs that walk away from it are going to feel like it was worth being part of the event. And if they don't, we'll take their feedback on board and try and look at what we do for years to come. So, you know, we've got this one, and then, you know, in terms of our agreement with the states, we've got another 4 years after this to you know, continue to build the NBL One brand and the way that it's structured. And, you know, by the end of that, we hope we've got a really good formula that lasts the test of time in Australia for basketball and puts the states up against each other every year.
Well, Dean, just to add to that last point, and as you were talking, and something that's been sort of a theme throughout the season and part of the big push to become the NBL One West out here, in Perth, Western Australia, is to be that national level competition and to see how we stack up against the East Coast. We're really excited to see how Warwick and Rockingham will go on the weekend, and we want to be seen on that same level as what was formerly those state leagues in Victoria and New South Wales, and this gives us that opportunity, and no matter what happens, I'm sure it'll be a great weekend.
Yeah, I think from what I've definitely what I've seen, I mean I watched most of Saturday night's men's game. As I said, I was there for the women's on Friday night, and I've seen games all across the country. I mean, those two teams are coming over as good as the others, as good as everyone I've seen. So that Rockingham men's team looks amazing, and it'll be interesting to see how they actually stack up against the other teams. We might not know that until the end of the weekend, and depending on how the draw goes, the reality is we might not know it because they might not match up against what historically I guess have been the big states, which is Queensland and Queensland and Victoria. I'm not sure whether they will end up matching up against those two teams. We'll just have to see how the game between the wild card and the East goes, and then the South and the North game on the Friday night as well. So, that's from a men's point of view. Obviously, it's a little bit different in the women's. South East in the women's and North versus the wild card, which ironically is actually an all North game in the women's. North versus the wild card, with the Southern Districts holding that spot. So. Yeah, look, who knows what's going to come out of it. It will be interesting to talk to you guys after the weekend and see what you thought on how the WA teams did actually stack up against some of the other teams from around the country.
Dean, our very own Ben Pether is, of course, heading over that way. Can you give him his calling roster as yet? Do we know what game he's going to be on? Because, of course, all the games are live and free on KO Freebies, but we also want to be able to listen to the dulcet tones of MVL1 West Commentator of the Year, Ben Pether, on his call.
That's an absolute Costello. That's an absolute stitch-up. Sorry, Dean.
I honestly wish you had told me this just before we came on air, and I would have looked at what game he's going to do. I can tell you what the plan is, that we will match up state commentators with their state team. So for the most part. So Ben's first game will be one of the WA games. I was going to say I don't have to think too hard about that, because as I speak I go, you know what, they're both, it's the double header. I'm pretty sure Ben's doing both of the games on the Friday night.
Easy roster. Turn up and call it both. What I was going to say, Dean, is that Ben had actually called both of these teams to win back in June, and we played that footage a little bit earlier on in the show as well. So Ben will definitely be behind both of these teams, that's for sure.
Yeah, there you go. Now, we look forward to having him over here. Ben and I got a chance to meet when we were at, I think it was Lakeside, Ben, when I was wandering around. Other than Kalgoorlie and Geraldton, they're the only two clubs or stadiums I haven't made it to. I've made it to every other stadium in WA, and in total of the 72 clubs around the country, I've only missed four stadiums so far. So,
that's incredible.
I try my hardest to get out and introduce myself to people and say hi and make sure that when Ben gets to Melbourne, he feels comfortable that he's coming into an environment with people that know him and want him to be around. So we can't wait to have the commentators from around the country get over here as well and be part of the event. So.
All right, Dean Anglin, the general manager of the NBL One. We thank you very much for your time and all of your inputs into the NBL One West radio show during the season as well.
Pleasure, boys.
Thanks very much. Let's get this thing started. The all-new NBL One West radio show. Rounding things off here at the NBL One West radio show for the final time in season 2022. Feeling a little bit nostalgic about this long road trip that we've been on together, Jordan.
Yeah, it's been a year, which is stunning to think that it's all said and done. I think I said it earlier in the show that you feel like you're on this ride and you feel like you won't get off, and then all of a sudden, bang, in an instant, it's over. And look, it's been a great year, and I've enjoyed being part of the radio show, and hope that the listeners have enjoyed being a part of the ride with us as well.
We've certainly kept ourselves busy, what with the radio show, with calls on the live stream, some of the radio broadcasts during the finals as well, and so all of that put together has equaled great exposure for the NBL One West as they continue their growth.
Yeah, absolutely, and the radio side of things from the last few weeks really gives it, I guess, a bit of a different dynamic. Not everyone's always able to be around be around a TV to watch a game, and you know, some might be at work and might want to keep up with it. So having the audio medium available there for the finals was fantastic. And look, you never know. There's a chance it could continue into next season, and hopefully maybe bleed into some regular season games if the support can be there from a financial perspective to be able to do it. So look, that'd be fantastic. And the more ears and eyes on this league, the better, because as we saw across the weekend, it can produce a really stunning product.
We talked a little bit about some teams already being in off-season mode, a couple of coaching announcements already across the league in preparation for season 2023.
Yeah, Charles Nick's back into the coaching fold, the Perth Redbacks, which is going to be it's going to be one to watch for them. They were one of the teams that was probably unlucky to miss finals this year. You know, they had some great games this year and showed that when they were at their best, they could really take it up to anyone. And, you know, if they can get their lineup to be stable next year, their best lineup is outstanding. And you know, if they're able to bring over an import to really bolster that lineup as well, that bodes really well for them. And you know, having a coach like Charles Nix come in and wield his influence over that playing group, that'll be something to really watch for next year, because you know, they're sitting in that ninth position. They could more than definitely push up into the top eight and a potential there to have a look at a top four spot as well.
And we spoke with Nixie before he went over to New Zealand to be coaching one of the women's teams over there in the New Zealand National Basketball League. He's quite a unique coach in some ways, in that he's probably spent equal time connected with women's and men's programs, and more recently being the manager there at the Perth Wildcats as well.
It shows that he's adaptable, I guess, and you know, so much of coaching is about people management, especially at high performance level, when you know, your job as a coach is to get the best out of your playing group, which includes getting the best out of each individual person, let alone, you know, it's not just the X's and O's from an on-court perspective. It's managing personalities off the court, and being able to do it in vastly different environments shows that, you know, he's obviously had a great amount of learning from those experiences. And look, I'm fascinated to see how this goes, because the Redbacks just feel like that almost team. You know, you feel like when they do get to a final series like they did in 2021, they can really make some noise and do some damage. You know, they were 5 minutes of basketball away last season from a potential grand final appearance. You know, they had a brief lapse against the Perry Lakes Hawks and it cost them the game. You know, so it's something that's a bit of a watch this space, and it's exciting times ahead for the Redbacks in 2023.
And the women's Redbacks coach running it back as well.
Yeah, Michelle Fletcher comes back aboard, and that's exciting for them that they found some stability there too. And look, you know, again, you felt like on their night, they could be a great team, the Perth Redbacks women's team, and they were excellent in 2021. Had a bit of a down year this year, you know, just couldn't quite get the balance right. If they can find that again, they've got one of the brightest young talents in the NBL 1 West in their women's, in Shanae Hartree. Like, I'm really high on what she can do. And as an 18-year-old, she was wielding such a huge influence on games this year. And another year of development into her in that inside position, surround her with the experience that's already there. And I guess time will tell what they can make of that playing roster. But, you know, they've got a lot of young teenagers in there too, that another year of experience in the NBL 1 West competition will be great for them. And, yeah, I guess we'll see exactly what that means in season 2023.
We also want to thank our Crystal Ball Award winner and our co-host and co-contributor during season 2022. We speak, of course, of Ben Pether. He's already left straight to the airport to get to Melbourne for the national finals.
He's off, and he'll be commentating the two NBL 1 West games that Dean Anglin mentioned. So the Warwick Senators will be playing the West Adelaide Bearcats. That's on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, so 4 p.m. over here in WA, a bit of an early one, but a nice right as you finish work sort of time to get your eyes around it. And then the Rockingham Flames will be taking on the South Adelaide Panthers at 8 p.m. Eastern, so 6 p.m. Perth time, which is a perfect time on Friday night to get your eyes around some national championship basketball.
And I didn't want to say it while we had Dean on the line, because obviously he has to be fairly neutral, but I feel like that's a reasonably favourable draw for the West Australian teams to be playing the central champions. They're probably not viewed quite as favourably as the NBL 1 South and North teams, which may be viewed as a little stronger perhaps.
Yeah, potentially. And look, this is one of those, you know, all cards are up in the air sort of tournaments. You never know how teams are going to travel. And I guess it is advantageous as well that both of those teams had their grand final final on the weekend just gone, you know, and you know, they've just sort of finished up their season at the same time. They're not playing a team that's had a week's rest and, you know, been able to recuperate and those sort of things, like we touched on with Tom Jervis. You know, they're playing teams that are off a similar sort of rest. So it'll be really interesting to see, yeah, what they can do and exactly how the quality of play here in Western Australia stacks up on a national level. And I'll be interested to see how the format of the tournament works as well. It's certainly a fascinating one, the 7-point games. And, it'll be fun to see who comes out on top. And it'll be great to finally have a national champion at the third attempt.
Of course, you can check out all of those games live and free on KO Freebies or via the NBL One app and NBL One website. We should also take a quick pause to say thanks to Adam Bowler, the general manager of the NBL One West, for all of his support in terms of this radio show, connecting us with guests, providing us with a bit of exclusive material here and there, the occasional hot topic to discuss as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He does a mountain of work, Adam, behind the scenes. And saw him buzzing around on Friday and Saturday nights at the grand finals, earpiece in, making sure that everything is running smoothly. Ran a fantastic show on both nights, including some brilliant entertainment on the court at halftime, pregame, all those things. You know, all the little details that make those events run really, really well. He was absolutely all over it. And yeah, he's been such a huge support of us in the radio show. You know, he was the one who got me involved this year with doing the radio show, and Ben as well. Wanted to really mix it up a little bit. And I hope that we've done that. I hope that the vision he had for the show has come to life. And I hope that it's provided some fun content for listeners to have in their ears each week from an NBL One perspective. And it's certainly been a lot of fun to be a part of. And he's been a huge reason why it's happened.
And finally, Jordan, thank you very much for your inputs. Last year's NBL One Commentator of the Year, as we do like
I'm
to keep going on about. Okay, well, it's all up for grabs. It's all up for grabs next season. It's going to be hot. Could there be a dark horse who just comes sweeping through?
Look, there's plenty. Like, you say that, and you know, I'm only half jokingly mentioning that I'm going to take it right back off Ben in 2023. Don't worry about that. I'll be on my game next year. But, not that I wasn't this year, but you know, I'll just have that sharp focus for 2023. Yes. But That's been a big thing that I've noticed. Like, it's been great fun being a part of this show, and I have enjoyed it. There are so many great young commentators coming through around the league. Mm. You know, I don't know whether guys are seeing it and girls are seeing it as a stepping stone to something bigger, or whether there's a passion for basketball that's shining through in a lot of these calls. Whatever it is, there's some really great young commentators that are making their way through at the moment, and it's fun to be a part of. It's fun to meet all those guys and girls and you know, see how much of a passion they have for their craft, and that can only mean good things for the product as it comes across on TV as well, which yes. can only mean more viewers' eyes on it, and you know, that means more and more growth. So I hope that it's not myself or Ben. I hope that there is a dark horse that comes through, because that means there's you know, there's so much quality coming through. Yes. From a commentary perspective,
I think the pool of people is definitely expanding as these opportunities expand. You know, many years back, maybe the grand final would have been broadcast and that was it. Mm. Whereas now we've got every single game broadcast. There's plenty of opportunities for people to throw their hat in the ring, get some experience, get involved, be paired with experienced callers who can kind of guide people through.
And there's been a lot of characters on the broadcast as well. I encourage anyone who's listening to not just watch their home team broadcast, but watch some others and listen to some of the, you know, the unique characters that come through. And that's one thing that Adam Bowler does as well, is really encourages each person who's on these broadcasts to bring their own unique personality to it, and, you know, give the broadcast some life in that way. He's really open to that, and I think that's really created an environment where people are thriving, and it means that the calls are that much better when you're bringing your own sort of experiences to it, and, you know, the way you bounce off each other and that sort of thing. And look, it's fun to be a part of it. It's fun to see that growth happen. And as I said, if you know, it's not Ben or I next year, that can only be a good thing for the league, that it's expanding its horizons like that. And look, he's hoping that someone else can come up and do it. I certainly hope so. It'll be great, because it means there's another great person being involved in the NBL One West.
Well, that's about it from us for season 2022. On behalf of Ben Pether, Jordan Scardetta, and Brett Costello, you've been with the NBL One West radio show. Signing out.
Missed a part of the show or wanting more? Check the NBL One West radio show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Podbean, and Podomatic. Listen or download in your own time, and check out the podcast exclusives for more.